This is Suit Up Sports.
Suit Up Sports.
Where opinions are as sharp as a tailored suit. No fluff, no gimmicks, just unfiltered, hard-hitting takes on sports and a whole lot more. It's time to suit up. Now here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome back to Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ The Suit Stout along with Frank Garcia. And right now we're going to bring Brett Hoffman on the show, NFL draft analyst for Sleeper NFL and founder of Gator Wagers, an odds comparison platform for future betting odds. Brett, how you doing?
How are you? Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well.
Thank you for coming on, man. So you were at the Combine this past, four or five days. And obviously here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Carolinas in general, the Panthers are always probably the top topic that people want to discuss. Eighth pick in the draft this year. They've had great success with the eighth pick in the past with guys like Christian McCaffrey and Luke Kuechly. This year, everyone, I think, has the consensus is they've got to go defense. They had the worst defense in the NFL last year, gave up more points than any team in the history of the NFL last year. So between free agency and the draft, defense is obviously going to be probably 85% of what they try to knock out. Who did you see in the Combine? And I've got some players that I want to ask you about, but from a defensive standpoint, anybody that really surprised you or at least came in and did what you thought they would do that you go, oh, man, this guy's going to be a lock?
Yeah, I think that James Pierce was one of the guys that I was looking for to either see if he was going to have a great Combine or not. He was initially when the mock draft season began, he was like a top 10 pick for most people, and then he started to slide down the board. So the Combine was huge for him. Obviously, he ran incredibly well. He tested incredibly well. He'll probably put himself back in that top, 15 category. Mm-hmm. So I definitely would say that he's, in the mix for that Panthers pick. Outside of just like guys who stood out at the Combine with regards to the Panthers, I definitely think defense, I agreed with you guys, is going to be the pick at eight. Jalen Walker could be an option. Mm-hmm. Mike Green's been kind of up and down with the board. And then if Mikel Williams from Georgia, he may honestly be an absolutely opportunity if he slides down a little bit. You guys are picking right after two teams that will probably go offense with the Raiders and the Jets. Who knows?
Yep.
But, you'll probably have your choice of maybe the second, or third best overall defensive prospect in the draft.
A lot of these guys are making names for themselves at the Combine, and it's a great opportunity for them to go out there and compete and showcase themselves. But a lot of times you don't see all the tests that these guys run. Maybe a guy's not going to run a 40 or, maybe do a long jump or throw the ball or whatever it might be because they have pro days. And how much has that changed with what these guys and what you guys are looking for at the Combine and what these scouts are looking for to evaluate these guys and, maybe find that sleeper that just creeps up and you go out there and draft because his numbers are just through the roof?
Right. And it's interesting. I was talking to Charles Walls, who's, I think, the director of player personnel at the Eagles. And I was asking him kind of about how you sort of identify or how you use the testing metrics to really make that pick. I was saying, like, don't you guys just watch the tape and really get an idea of that type of player who you're bringing in? But he was explaining to me the value of such measurables and getting those metrics and sort of making comparable comps to other former players who had similar, tests or similar sizing. So that will allow them to sort of like, find that pattern or that, comparable player that they could sort of identify and target. So even if for the Combine, the star players don't really play. So a lot of it's for guys who are, trying to move up the board from, the second. Right. The first or day three to day two. So for smaller school guys, this is a massive opportunity to showcase who they are. So right. You saw a lot of guys at the Combine break out. Maybe you haven't heard of them or, they weren't a big name prior, but the Combine's a massive chance to really stand out and kind of, either wash the tape or, add to your tape. And it's a big opportunity for sure.
Talk with Brett Hoffman, NFL draft analyst for Sleeper NFL and founder of Gator Wagers, an odds-based comparison platform for future betting odds. I want to ask you about that before we get out of here soon. But let me ask you a question back to James Pierce, because you're right. I mean, he performed outstanding at the Combine. He's a Charlotte kid, so, we've all, mm-hmm. followed his career at Tennessee. But there's a lot of talk that he's going to fall. Some people haven't fallen even out of the second round due to character issues, but no one really has said what these issues are. I mean, I've read that maybe he stays out at, you know, late night too much or this or that. And you know, obviously I don't like to speculate on anything that I haven't vetted out, but you know, there's no question the kid's a beast. And, you know, as a Panther fan, if they didn't take him in the first round and he's there at their second pick, I would be absolutely floored if they didn't take him there. But you know, it's amazing. And I know that Green also from Marshall had some of that, but he addressed it head on, which I thought was a very smart move by his agent, and you know, for him to get out there and take these questions and answer them and get out in front of it, so that, you know, it's not going to be something he's going to be asked about 1,000 times in the public. Now obviously every team that interviews him, that's going to be something that they check out and vet out. But you know, the Pierce thing, is there anything that you've heard that or is it just the same thing that I've heard, which is just he has character issues? There's no substance behind it.
I really wish I could give you more intel. I don't have more information than that, kind of what you're describing. I think that some teams have maybe put a red flag or, you know, a little caution sign behind him. But the best way for or a team to really get into that, obviously, is meeting these guys in person. I don't really have that sort of access to meet all the prospects. So
sure.
I'd be making it up, and I don't want to do that. And I'd say that, you know, his meetings will probably be more important than other players because of such concerns. You know, those meetings are massive. You know, how you handle it and how you address it with these teams, and it's really important. So I'm not sure exactly the issues, but I'm sure that him and his agent were very keen on performing pretty dang well at those interviews.
Yeah.
You know, my buddies and I, we sit and we kind of joke, and you know, if I'd have been 3 inches taller, I'd have been a first rounder. If I'd have been, you know, 2/10 faster, I'd have made it to the first round. I'd played another 5-6 years, you know, things like that. But you know, I think the one thing that we all have in common as ex-players is that we understand that first rounders aren't made, they're born, right? And you look at the tangibles that stand out, and the guy I'm speaking of is Nick Umunori from South Carolina. I mean, the guy stole the day and maybe stole the combine with his measurables. We've seen a lot of them down in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of a, you know, Cam Chancellor type of guy to me. Don't really know if he's going to be a safety or if they're going to be a conversion linebacker, but he'd be a hell of a guy at nickel. What can he do? And I guess the answer is he can do everything. And,
yeah.
You know, that's a guy that coaches love to take, and maybe still in the combine and made himself a lot of money.
Probably one of the biggest movers at the combine in terms of making himself money was Nicky Manwari. I watched a ton of Gamecock football SEC this year, and you know, he's an imposing force. You know, you see him out there, he's omnipresent, he's up, he's flying around. The one question I had prior to the combine was sort of how he would do in testing, and if he's more of just like an imposing, you know, come over the middle type safety, or if he could actually, you know, play ball, you know, be a ball hawking safety as well. And you know, his testing was tremendous. I think he ran a 4.38 or something like that. He, you know, to be honest with you, like, he actually probably made the biggest move on the defensive side of the ball. Him and maybe Jahdae Barron. You know, mm-hmm. Jahdae was already kind of a hot, you know, commodity flying up the boards prior to the combine, but he only just put himself as, you know, maybe a top 10 pick. To me, he's my number one ranked corner. Wouldn't be surprised. I'm not sure. I need to look at Carolina's needs again, but his cornerback and need.
For corner is definitely
any position on defense you can throw in the mix right there for the Panthers.
They've got JC Horn, who they're hopefully going to sign an extension soon. But other than that, they don't have one. So, corner. There's no doubt that they'll address that in the draft.
I would love Jahdae Barron at 9 overall to you guys. I have him mocked, you know, in some of my mock drafts. I did it to my Jets at 8 because we also need a cornerback. So I'm super high on him. I think he'll probably be available right by you guys, and I think that would be a really
you have him. You have him ranked as your number one corner.
Yeah, I just think that he's you know, obviously Hunter is a tough to you know, say someone's better than him, but I think that Hunter honestly would be way better off on offense. You know, he reminds me he could be like a Tyreek Hill type, you know, a total freak. So I'm not sure if he has that prototypical size to really tackle, and you know, he looks kind of small out there. Yeah. I watched Jahdae Barron play against obviously the highest level competition, but specifically I was watching that Ohio State game, you know, and to see how he covered up against, you know, Jeremiah Smith and those guys. And he's absolutely my guy.
Well, let me ask you about another defensive end who really did well in the combine, and he's one of these guys that's, I think, more potential over production, and that's Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M. I mean, again, athletic freak, explosive, looks like the atypical defensive end, but his production doesn't match what you see in the combine. I think he had 1.5 sacks last year as well as the year before that, which, you know, 3 sacks over 2 years for a guy like that seems like he's not really doing his job. What do you think about that guy? Because a lot of people think now that he has entered the Panthers mix a little bit.
100%. So it was an interesting evaluation because him and both Nick Scored and both linebackers at A&M were sort of in that first round bubble and play, you know, I think teams are trying to identify who that lead guy was out of the two. Initially, Scorton was that guy, you know, in the initial mock drafts, everyone, you'll see Nick Scorton, top 20, etc. Yep. It seems to me like that completely has changed. Similarly, a little bit later in the process, to imagine like Isaiah Bond and Matthew Golden. You know, everyone expected Bond to be that guy, but rather it was his teammate who sort of took that mantle for him. Yeah. It seems to be like Shamar Stewart has basically replaced Nick Scorton on these evaluations and these draft boards, and seems to be obviously his. I saw him actually at the he was cool. I was scootering around in Indianapolis one after like meetings and stuff, and he was there. He actually like talked to me for a minute. He helped me figure out how to get my bike stopped. So seemed like a nice guy for it. 2 seconds I got to meet him. He'll definitely be in the mix for you guys. Super hot name flying up the board.
He is
8 overall.
And the Panthers could even trade down, which is there's rumors that they may even trade down, you know, 4 or 5 spots, and I think a guy like that would probably still be in the mix there too. Talk with Brett Hoffman from NFL draft analyst from Sleeper NFL and founder of Gator Wagers, an odds comparison platform for future betting odds. Let me ask you about the running backs. Panthers, that's not a need for the Panthers. I mean, I think they will maybe take one later in the draft, but, obviously with them extending Chuba Hubbard last year. But a lot of people have Amarion Hampton overtaken Jenny after this combine. He was already expected to be a first-round pick, so I don't think that's changed. But you do hear some rumors out there that he went above Jenny in some of these draft boards. What do you think about that?
I don't buy it at all.
Yeah, I don't either.
Not even one bit. Genty, like, you know, I was watching his interviews. He just seems like the guy, you know, and obviously that doesn't take a lot of skill or, you know, scouting knowledge to see that. But Genty's going to be top 12 pick. I don't see Omer. Initially, I was the first guy to say there's going to be a ton of running backs being picked. But after realizing the depth, and you could find a similar guy maybe in the second, third, I don't even see Omarion Hampton being a first round pick. I'd be surprised.
Really?
So there's so many other positional needs and, you know, important addressing to do rather than drafting a running back there. I'm not saying he's not a stud because he absolutely is, but I personally have him as my third or fourth ranked running back in this draft. I still have Caleb Johnson ahead of him. I'm not just going to go jumping on the combine and just saying this guy is better than this guy. I still have Caleb Johnson. I still think Quidshon Judkins is my running back 3. So. Yeah. I understand the Hampton hype. I would just say let's tamper it down a bit.
Saquon Barkley, may have changed that status for what you're talking about, because I know the NFL is a copycat league. And when you look at what the devaluation of what running backs have become, getting those guys second, third, fourth round, because maybe they're only good for that first 4 or 5 years. How much has Saquon changed that perspective for some of these GMs to say we have a lot of pieces in place. We just need that final piece to bring us here and take us home.
Great point. I think that we're seeing, as you said, there was a devalue in the running back, and that is completely going back to we're valuing the running back. Mm-hmm. Not just Barkley. Obviously Barkley's the lead guy, but you know, Jacobs and Derrick Henry, etc. So we're seeing, you know, I never really fully understood why that, you know, we went away from that and sort of being a running back from committee. Yeah, there's a lot of injuries at that position. I understand that you got to have depth there, but a star running back has always been, you know, a critical part of having a great team. And obviously it requires a good offensive line. So, I think that a great running back could sort of make a decent offensive line, you know, look better than it is. So maybe that's where, you know, Jenny will come in. Maybe if he's picked in the top 10, his offensive line probably won't be like the best team in the league. So you'll see him sort of transform that team into being better than they should be, essentially.
Yeah, a lot of mocks have him going to the Raiders. Yeah. And then today there's been a lot of scuttlebutt about quarterbacks and trades and, you know, Jets, which I know you broke the story about the Jets trying to move up for Cam Ward. New York Giants today, I read, are also trying to move up to number one for Cam Ward. Shedeur Sanders didn't seem to do himself any favors this week. He seems to be sliding back. And now he could even be a guy that Raiders maybe take at six as opposed to Jenty, because they obviously are need of a quarterback. But as far as the quarterbacks go, who impressed you? Because yours, I thought, looked very well. And I think he's kind of an undervalued quarterback that maybe isn't getting a lot of the attention. And then Louisville's quarterback, you know, I know a lot of people really were high on him.
Let me say this before you answer that. Shedeur Sanders will be the biggest if they take him top 10 pick.
Wow. I don't know about that.
That's bold take.
Yeah,
and I'm glad to address that. In regards to, you know, the initial question, I was watching, obviously, Dart, Milrow, Ewers, Will Howard, McCord. I was a little bit, you know, obviously people are ripping Will Howard's performance. I'm not jumping on that. I saw a lot of Will Howard at KSU and OSU to like his game and think he's a good leader. And I think that he'll still be a mid third, fourth round pick. I was not very impressed with Milrow. I mean, you know, we all kind of agree. I think with Milrow, you got to develop him right. You know, you got to put him in a really good situation if you're going to make that selection. Dart looked good, but, you know, Dart's a little risky. You know, Dart played in a really wide open Ole Miss offense that has no NFL, you know, like levels to it. So, you know, he'll be a developmental type. And, you know, I've been bullish on Cam Ward for a long time. You know, since Washington State, you know, I was watching him run the Apple Cup. You know, he was that guy to me, and came over to Miami. That's my college. I saw a ton of him, dominated, won the Davey O'Brien. I'm kind of at a loss for why people are not really respecting Cam Ward as much as they really should be. I think he's just as good as, you know, as the first pick is every year. You know, I think Cam has franchise potential. And with regards to Sanders, with the pick value, I think six Raiders, I'd be absolutely stunned if they took Jenty over Sanders. You know, if Sanders is there, look, the production at college is there. You know, we all watch him. He does all the things you want to see in terms of, like, you know, going through the progressions. You know, he played behind a terrible offensive line.
Sure did.
He had some good receivers with Horn and Wester, et cetera, and obviously Hunter. So he definitely had some guys there, but I saw a lot to like in Sanders, and I know that he's polarizing. And people said, this is kind of a different opinion. People say, like, if his name wasn't Sanders, he wouldn't be a top 10 pick. I have the exact opposite feeling. I think that if name was anything, you'd look at his numbers and be like, this guy's a stud. But now we're all judging it under the cloud of he's Deion's son, you know, primetime son, all that hoopla. So it becomes a harder evaluation.
Well, I think a lot of times it depends on where these guys go in the situation. Sure. You know, like you said, you know, with, you know, having the pieces in place and you seeing what, you know, Caleb Williams and some of these guys are doing in their first year. You know, at the kid at Washington has just had a phenomenal year. But the one thing that stands out about all those quarterbacks is, you know, especially even in the Super Bowl or the MVPs, is that they're all mobile and they're all big and they all can run and they all have designed running plays. That position to me has kind of, you know, evolved into quarterback/running back. And if you don't have that, you're not going to be very effective in this league.
Oh, completely agree. You either need an absolute rock star pocket passer like a Joe Burrow, which don't really exist, or you got to have a guy that can move, mobile. You know, RPO is obviously a massive part of the game. You know, getting out of the pressure and really improvising. Obviously, like, everyone's looking for that guy. So that's why when I look at the top two QBs in this draft, we're looking at two mobile guys, not run first QBs, but both similar to, like, you know, they're down to escape the pocket when need be, and both could take off. You know, I think Ward's a little faster, but, you know, QB speed, tough to tell. And, you know, obviously it's critical these days, just like you said, you got to be able to run and throw and get out of situations.
Let me ask you about Cam Ward, because, you know, again, watching him in college and even at Washington State, he's unbelievable. But the one knock on him is he a first guy's not open, run guy. And you obviously being going to Miami, you've seen him play a lot more than I have. Is that the case? Because I have seen some of that on tape where I do think if his first guy's not open, if his first read's not open, he's taken off. And so I think that's the one knock is he a guy that's going to make his progressions and make the right play? Or is he going to, if the first guy's not there, he's gone?
I you're kind of right. Like if you watch him, he's a little loose with that. Like he's a little too, like, sometimes he looks like he's like, you know, the greatest player ever known, can touch him. Like he's just casual, silky. Mm-hmm. And it looks good when it works out because you're like, wow, that was smooth. But you're right. Sometimes it causes situations where, you know, he holds onto the ball too long. And obviously mm-hmm. at the NFL level, your time is much quicker. You got to get rid of the ball way quicker.
Yeah.
This goes back to what we were just describing. You got to put him in the right situation, got to have a really good coach, because I'm not saying Cam Ward at current, you know, form is going to be a stud. Cam Ward is somebody you got to develop, but has every tool you could possibly imagine to develop with. Also in terms of leadership, in terms of off the field, everything is, you know, I've heard, you know, 5-star reviews, leader, yeah, alpha, player you want to play with. So, I'm a big fan, as I said earlier, and I would take him 1 overall and never look back.
I tell you, the other thing that really stood up for me, you know, watching these guys compete and in the draft is the size and the speed of the big guys. Yes. It just feels like over time, you know, even back to, you know, when I was going through this entire process, the guys have gotten so much bigger and faster at all positions, including, and in particular, the offensive line. But I think for the Panther fans and, you know, the guys here and this, the majority can be watching this podcast, want to know who's those D tackles or those guys up front that can just chase down quarterbacks and hunt at that defensive tackle position.
Yeah, I think that obviously Abdul Carter is the number one edge in the draft, so he won't be available by, you know, the Panthers selection. So once we jump outside that, you know, kind of, you know, and that's not like the end of the world. I think that there are other guys that could be just as effective. I know we quickly spoke earlier about Jalen Walker, but I'm super high on him. You know, he won the Butkus Award as the best linebacker in the country.
Yeah.
Played at Georgia. I mean, he's got the pedigree everyone could ask for. He could be the next great pass rusher. There obviously are, you know, going to be opportunities later in the draft. I think Shamar Stewart's great. I think Landon Jackson out of Arkansas, he had a nice, you know, combine. I liked his game. That guy Princely out of Ole Miss could be a nice third round, you know, edge. So, you know, Mason Graham's getting a lot of the talk in terms of like the first round, you know, defensive line. I know he's not really a defensive end, but he's more of the DT. So I think that he may be around at 8, just maybe, sort of in that fringe area. But you're talking about the, you know, Frank, you're talking about the position where probably has the most depth in the draft. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you want to bypass that at 8 overall because you have the idea that, hey, I'm going to go address it at, I forget where you guys pick in the second round, 40-something. But, you know, I think that there's an opportunity to grab somebody who's just as good maybe in the second round if you do your evaluations right and maybe get somebody else at 8 overall, maybe a Jade or somebody else.
Yeah, it's definitely a good year if you need defense like the Panthers do, it's a great year for that. And some of the guys that might be available in the second round that I thought had good combines, be interested to see what you think about these guys. Alfred Collins from Texas, you know, he's one of those big guys. You were talking about, Frank, 6'5", 322, and ran a 4.9, which is just unbelievable. And then a guy like Darius Alexander from Toledo, saying, you know, 6'4", 300-pound dude. And, you know, the Panthers need somebody to stick next to Derrick Brown at the D tackle, because again, they were awful against the run last year. So it's not just edge that they need. Who are some of the guys that, like you said, might be available in the second, third round that had good combine and that you think could be a steal later in the draft?
Yeah. I think that, you know, Mike Green is sort of a guy that I would be saying is in that area. I think Kyle Kennard is kind of an underrated guy that I liked a lot at South Carolina, had a lot of production. Jordan Birch, another linebacker, Oregon, you know, he's got prototypical size, bend and all that you're looking for. You know, DT is a little bit, you know, I would like to go through my rankings again, but those are the initial names that kind of just jump out at me. You know, in terms of like, you know, second round, third round, you know, there's also, you know, those two Ohio State linebackers that are both, you know, Sawyer and JTT. Mm-hmm. So, there's no rush to making that pick. I think there's a ton there.
Yeah. That's why, you know, I was having this conversation the other day, and I don't think this is going to happen. I would be shocked if it happened, but you know, Canales talked really, really highly of Warren, the tight end out of Penn State at the combine. And a lot of times, and you know this because you were just there and talking to these guys, a lot of times at the combine, the coaches and the general managers are very careful to not talk too much about the guys they really like. And so Canales was just glowing, saying that, you know, we could play him at tight end, H-back. We could have him, you know, do quarterback sneaks.
He's a great luxury pick.
Exactly. Right. And I don't think the Panthers are in a position to make a luxury pick. However, it's going to piss me off if the Saints get him right behind us and then we have to play that guy for 10 years. But you know, and tight end, by the way, is another position that after the combine seems to be a little deeper than people thought before the combine.
First of all, 100%. I mean, you guys right now have Tommy Tremble, right?
He's a free agent. They're talking about bringing him back. But the kid that really has everybody excited is Sanders, who we took out of Texas last year.
Yep.
And he had a good year. He got hurt. He got his bell rung in a game. And after that, he wasn't quite the same. But he went on about a 3-4 game run where he looked, you know, really good. So the Panthers are excited about him. But I think they definitely are going to add to that room. They just let Ian Thomas go finally, and probably 2 years too late.
But that's addition by subtraction.
Yeah, there. But Tremble had a good year last year, but he's a free agent. But they are wanting to bring him back, but he's going to test the waters first.
For sure. And I actually like Tremble's game. But, yeah, to your point. And also, I just wanted to jump back on your question earlier. Walter Nolan is a guy who's kind of sliding down the board. Mm-hmm. The Ole Miss DT. I think that he's another second-round pick. Maybe late first if he gets back in there. And then Derek Harmon, another guy that's kind of sliding down a little bit. And I really liked him at Oregon. Very, you know, big time guy. He was always
He had a good combine, right? I mean, he seemed to have a really good combine.
I forget exactly his numbers, but I thought he performed pretty well.
Yeah.
And to just jump back on the Tyler Warren stuff, you know, that's my guy. I need the Jets to pick him right before you guys. I'm so sorry. Tyler Warren does it all. Like last year, Brock Bowers was that guy. I thought he was going to be a stud. He was a stud. Tyler Warren, if you watch him, anyone, you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a scout. Anyone could see it. You know, he lines up everywhere. He's in the backfield. He's in the slot. He's on the outside. Yep. He's making catches. He's cutting across the middle. So I think that Tyler Warren's going to be an absolute rock star. And, you know, he probably, to me, is the best player available, you know, in terms of production right away. Offensively, he may be the offensive rookie of the year. So I'd watch out for Tyler Warren, and I would say take him if he is there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because Genty's another guy that Panther fans are arguing about when you go to the best player available concept. And if he is there when we pick at 8, and again, I don't see any way that they would ever take a running back at number 8 with all the needs they need on defense. Warren, I doubt they would, but I can at least make an argument for it because it's another weapon for Bryce Young, who showed, you know, obviously the last 6-8 games of the year, he looked great. So I could at least see that, and I wouldn't get mad if they took him, especially with the depth that they have at defensive tackle, so they could still get some really good players later in the draft. But
you also have to take into consideration who the GM is, a defensive guy,
no doubt,
that knows the value of a defensive tackle because he played the position right behind him.
100%.
And I think that factors into a lot of the, you know, decision-making process.
For sure. For sure. I mean, you know, that pedigree will definitely, by the way, I'd be absolutely stunned if you guys took Genty. It doesn't make sense to me. You guys need a receiver too. You know, you don't really have much pass catchers after trading Deontay Johnson last year. I'm sure you'll sign one. But Bryce, to me, he looked excellent. Excellent, but he looked really, really good at the end of the last year.
And sure it is.
There's a lot of things to like. You got to get him some more talent.
Yeah, and receiver is something that again, they're going to, whether it's free agency, I know a lot of people think that they may sign Slayton from the Giants, take the top off the defense. Let's talk about the two Texas guys, you know, because Bond came out and said he was going to break Xavier Worthy's 40-yard dash speed, didn't even sniff it. No. But it was his teammate who really maybe turned himself into the first receiver taken.
No question. I think that's confirmed. I think Matthew Golden has earned himself into literally wide receiver one category after, you know, 2 months ago, probably being the 12th, you know, ranked receiver. Yeah. Absolutely has skyrocketed, propelled his way up the board, you know, from both on-field production and both testing. He's just, you know, had a killer, you know, couple of month stretch. You know, he's done everything he possibly want. And believe the hype, because he is flying up that board as high as 10, 12 overall. So Matthew Golden will be the first receiver taken. I got him ranked ahead of McMillan for sure, and like him a lot. And Bond struggled.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what I said earlier about first rounders not being made, they're born. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the risk reward factor and take into consideration the pedigree of the school and the competition that these guys are playing against, and you start getting into, you know, the third day or the second day, you know, third round, fourth round, fifth round, that's where drafts to me are won, because that provides the depth and sometimes the fill in starters that really you make a jump as a team, because everybody else gets better about the same rate, right? But when you get to the third or fourth round, when you find the diamond in the rough that really comes up, that's what separates you to take that next level, especially if it's an impact player. Is there a guy out there that maybe that we're not talking about that has all the production in the world, but just doesn't have the height, the you know, the one thing that he might be missing that puts him in that first round?
Yes. And Frank, specifically at the wide receiver position?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a couple of really, really, really deep sleepers that you got to, if you hit, you could do real well. Kyle Williams out of Wazoo is one of my deep sleepers. Somebody who's just been shooting up the draft board. I think that he'll be, you know, late second, third round pick potentially. I'm pretty high on Jack Beck. I know he's been killing it from, you know, the Shrine game to the, you know, mm-hmm. Combine, the TCU kid. I'd watch out for Nick Nash. I think San Jose State is a nice sleeper, has a ton of catches, just could be a really, you know, good plug and play. And then a guy that I just, like, I'm higher on, I guess, than most would be Trey Harris. Trey Harris, Ole Miss receiver. I think that he's just like not getting a lot of talk. I mean, I watched every Ole Miss game, and I thought he was dominating. You know, he got hurt mm-hmm. for a couple of games, but watch out for Trey Harris making a name in the NFL.
We're talking with Brett Hoffman, NFL draft analyst from Sleeper NFL, founder of Gator Wager, odds-based comparison platform for future betting odds. Tell us a little bit about that, because Frank and I talk wagering quite often and put our money where our mouths are. I don't know if we win as much as we'd like to. I know I don't, but
he likes to buy the hook all the time.
Well, yeah. So but tell us a little bit about those sites.
Yeah. So I started Gator Wagers kind of when legal betting began in around 2019, 2020. And really I was just, you know, noticing so much different odds from, you know, one sports book to the next. How you shop for a hotel price or a flight mm-hmm. price, you're finding the best price. So I said, hey, why don't I create an odds comparison platform for betting odds? Compare FanDuel to DraftKings to Caesars to BetMGM, and really get the best profit on whatever you're betting, because there's no point of shorting yourself on winning wagers. It's very hard to win wagers, as we all know. Mm-hmm. So if you go to GatorWagers.com, you'll basically see odds for the Super Bowl, odds for the NBA championship, odds on golf, PGA Tour is a big focus, where we'll just really just have the odds for all the players and teams compared, so that any customer for free could just jump on the website and click right to the best available price.
That's all. That's a great idea. I've actually seen that, and you know, I use FanDuel and a couple sure. others, and but it's a brilliant idea, because, like you said, I mean, you know, the juice on one might be yeah. you know, one -150, and on something else might be -125, and so having that all in one place to stop and shop is a great idea.
Are you a poker player?
I could play some poker.
Yeah, I can. I mean, he's the guy that's calculating the odds and you know, sure. making sure. Yeah.
And what about Sleeper NFL? Let's tell the audience about that.
Yeah. So Sleeper, I contribute to for their, you know, Sleeper's a massive, you know, platform. They're, you know, they're big, you know, one of their biggest things is their fantasy football department. You know, they've sort of taken over for Yahoo as the leader of the fantasy football platform. So that's where mm-hmm. a lot of leagues are taking place, and a lot of, you know, commissioners kind of start their league. So Sleepers also, you know, has a hell of a media, you know, stuff going on with the content and Twitter and Instagram. So I've been sort of contributing to their rookie rankings. You know, that's where I'm focused on, is just the draft. And they have a lot of fantasy leagues that have rookies included. It's called Dynasty Leagues. Mm-hmm. And you have to draft like rookies for like the future. So I'm working on just really giving their audience and their commissioners, you know, the best possible rankings, you know, tiered list of who my top tier, who my second tier, my third tier. Obviously, yeah. I'm going to be right on some. I'm going to be way off on others. But You know, that's just the projections. But that's, yeah, that's what Sleeper's up to these days.
Yeah, I love the site. And just from an information standpoint, even if you're not playing fantasy, which I do, but just from an information standpoint, it's great. Well, Brett, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. Your insight was great. And I'd love to have you back on maybe in a few weeks. And you know, things change in this day and age on a daily basis. You're talking about the Jets trying to get Warren. And I'm thinking, who's going to throw him the ball?
Well, free agency's right around the corner, too.
And free agency's coming up. So next week, I believe it is. So a lot will change. But, yeah, let's get you back on in a few weeks and catch up and see how your board has changed.
I'd love to. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to get myself a little bit more glued into Panthers football, you know, join some communities and see what the chirp is there so that next time I'll have even more glued in.
Thank you, buddy. Awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. You're listening to Suit Up Sports. Suit Up Sports. Here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome back to Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ The Suit Stout along with Frank Garcia. I want to thank Brett Hoffman again for joining us. He was great. A lot of good insight. And, you know, we threw a lot of questions at him about the Panthers in particular. Because we do have so many needs, but Brett did a good job and you know, I was writing down some of these players that he brought up so that when we draft some of these guys later in the draft, now you kind of know we've talked about them, kind of know how, you know, what school they went to, the size, the speed and all that. And I could talk NFL draft all day long.
I could too. I love doing it. And, it's always, you know, a risk reward. And I think, you know, what the draft has become, and it's always been, it's not really just become this overnight, but it's always become, you know, risk. You know, you take the guy with the most upside, very similar to what we did in 2011 when we drafted Cam Newton. A lot of really good quarterbacks out there, but to take him number one overall, you know, is the reason why I think a lot of people were a little hesitant at first, but then realize, you know, that people don't look like Cam out there. And I think that's the biggest problem a lot of people have with Bryce. So the problems exist. You don't make number one picks. You're born a number one pick. And when you look at Bryce Young, he wasn't born a number one pick. He wasn't born a first rounder. I mean, he made himself into some sort of that. And, you know, maybe he started showing more glimpses of that. But when you look at him physically and you look at him and his arm strength and all the things, the tangibles that he brings, he's not the number one overall pick. And I think that was the biggest problem I had with them taking him. Now, that being said, he's starting to learn. He's starting to grow and he started to develop and evolve. It's just taking a little bit of time and some failures. And I give him all the credit in the world for doing that, because that's probably one of the most difficult things to do, especially when you're at, you have all the pressure of being the number one overall pick. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the Panthers do, because they have potential with the upside of what Bryce did last year. And how do you separate yourself from the rest of the league? Because I think the one thing that we can both agree upon is that everybody gets better every year. Every fan base, that's what's great about the draft. That's what's great about the NFL. Through free agency and through the draft, every team thinks going into that next year, especially if you have a guy that's at the trigger puller that you feel like you're comfortable with, or you least have a chance, you have a shot to make the playoffs, and then eventually, who knows what happens, maybe make the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing with the Panthers is that the way Bryce finished last year, which he played, I think he was a top 10 rated quarterbacks the last maybe 8 weeks. And the way that Dan Morgan fixed the offensive line last year, which is not, you know, had been an issue for years. Then the fact, like you mentioned, through the draft and free agency this year, fixing the defense, you know, there is a chance for them to make the playoffs. The division, listen, the Saints are going to be awful. I mean, they are in salary cap prison. They're going to be awful. The Falcons, you know, they've got some of the same issues the Panthers do. They're going to have a young quarterback, and they're also got a lot of holes on defense. But the Panthers have the most salary cap room in our division. Tampa obviously is good, but Tampa's not scaring us. It's not like we're having to play the Patriots when Brady was there every year, twice a year. Like, we can beat Tampa. We should have beat them once this year. A bad call, I think, got us there. So you're right. I mean, I think with the right draft choices, the right free agent signings, Panthers could be in the playoffs next year. And Dan Morgan has to kind of do what he did this year on defense, or last year on offense, do it on defense.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that I'm interested to watch during the free agency period and throughout the draft, because Penix Jr. is in Atlanta now. Yep. And he started playing towards the end of the season and had some success. The team, I think, rallied around him, and the Falcon fans, who's probably our biggest rivalry, or anybody in the South, you know, the other two teams, you know, with the Bucks and, you know, the Falcons and the Saints, all three of those teams kind of feel like they have a chance moving forward with the guy that they have pulling the trigger. So who's going to make the best moves in free agency? How are we going to fix? Because I think from what I've understood, especially with the Panthers, is that if they don't hit in free agency, they can go get in the draft. And I think the one position they're looking in free agency right now is at safety. So I think we talked about some safety potentials.
Really good safeties,
and there's some really good safeties in that second, third
Javon
round.
Holland, the safety from Miami, who might be top five safety in the league. You know, a lot of people have the Panthers talking to him. He would be great. And you know, that's the thing too. And I talked a little bit about this last week. Bryce Young doing what he did at the end of the season changed this draft dramatically in a good way for Dan Morgan, because going into the draft needing a quarterback, especially if Bryce did not do that, now you're having to draft another quarterback probably in the first round, which is going to give you two, you know, first round quarterbacks on your roster in the last 3 years, which nobody ever wants that. That's a recipe for disaster. And that means your team has been awful. So Bryce doing what he did at the end of the year last year and showing that he can be a really good quarterback has really opened the draft up. And you know, with free agency, we talked about Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State. The one thing that would play into the Panthers' hands is if they do fill a defensive tackle or edge hole, safety hole, cornerback hole, whatever it is, if they fill some of these holes on defense through free agency, then all of a sudden you could actually, the percentage of them taking a Warren at number eight would go up some, because the depth in the draft on defense. And I think that's the only way they would take him. But if they could get, you know, a defensive tackle, a DB, safety, whatever the mix is in free agency, then maybe you do take Tyler Warren, which everyone, like, and Brett said it, you and I've talked about it, you know, even when we watched Penn State play, we sat there salivating on, gosh, how good this guy would be on the Panthers. And we haven't had a good tight end since Greg Olsen. And so, or not a really good tight end. And I think Sanders from Texas, he had a good rookie year. I think he's only going to improve. If they bring Tremble back, he's gotten better every year. But this dude's a whole different ball game.
Well, and I think that's really kind of what you look for, the combination of athleticism plus impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the reason why he's skyrocketing up the board, because when you, again, you know, what we talked about is that it's a copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at how teams are built. You look at what Saquon Barkley is going to do for the running back position. He's going to put them back into, you need a quality running back in order to win a championship. If your team is in that position, you can make a difference at that position with Derrick Henry's, with Barkley, because of what the impact that he has on a defense.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can make the same argument with a tight end from Penn State. Because again, when you look at the tight ends that played in the Super Bowl, you have Kelsey, you have Goddard, right? You have guys that are really good. One makes a play and one loses the game. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, that position that we're talking about right now was the game changing play for the reason why you do or don't go into the Super Bowl. And that's going to be interesting to see, you know, for the Panthers, because I think that he gives Bryce the best chance to win, but I don't know if he gives the team the best chance. And that's going to be the hard part for what Dan's trying to do this year, is that are we trying to make Bryce happy and give him players that's going to open up this offense and we're going to be able to score 50 points, but we're not going to be able to stop anybody, and we're going to be in the same position we are next year, looking back and saying we still need defense. So I think that's the conundrum the Panthers are in right now. Yep. What help? And I think ultimately, you know, the team is going to be more important than the player, the individual, you know, when you're looking at the way Morgan's building. And that's why I think they take defense and not have that luxury, even though he'd be a great pick, and he's going to be a difference maker, and it's going to be hard if we see him go to the Saints.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have to face that guy every year, and we're going to be, why didn't we take that guy? We're just not in that position as a team to be able to do that, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And I think the only way that we would even consider it would be if we nail some of these guys in free agency that they're going to go after.
You go get a safety, you go get a D tackle, and you get a linebacker. And now let's have this conversation.
I agree 100%.
Right. So if we do those things, which the Panthers have enough cap room to be able to do, now we're sitting in a different position talking about when it comes to the draft. And that's what's so great about this league. Now we look at how much better we got from this year compared to the Falcons, compared to the Saints, compared to the Bucks. Mm-hmm. And we say, okay, everybody's going to get better in free agency. How much better?
Yeah.
Right. Everybody's going to get better in the draft because you can get new players, better players. How much better? And that's going to be the difference. And the one position ultimately that defines that is what? The quarterback, because they're the biggest difference maker. And the nice thing for us and the Panthers is that we had a guy that was doing this. If you had asked me last year, it's kind of like the tale of three seasons for me. Going into the season, what did I think the record was going to be? You know, 5 wins. You know, something like that. I think that's what Vegas had it at 5.5, something like that. And I said, okay, I probably have taken the under because I wasn't real confident in Bryce. But if the Panthers can start doing this at the end of the season, Bryce's second year, then I'll say it's a successful season. Mm-hmm. Last year for me, for the Panthers, was a successful season, even though in the middle of the year I was ready to not watch them, not go to the games, and was so frustrated with them that towards the end of the season I was like, okay, they have that spark. And the momentum is rolling, and it's because of the way the quarterback played.
Yeah. And you know, another thing that gets overlooked a little bit is I think this is the first year and maybe the last 4 years that the Panthers will have the same offensive coordinator, head coach. And that's a huge difference. I mean, Bryce had, what, four different people giving him offensive plays his rookie year.
We can't use that as an excuse, though.
Not an excuse.
And I'll tell you why.
Because to be able to have that this year and have a coaching staff that he worked with and now another offseason under his belt. And we saw, by the way, part of the reason Bryce got better and better and better was because he got more comfortable and the coaches became more comfortable with Bryce as to what he can
do. I think Dave Canales and Bryce started getting on the same page.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that it's very, as a play caller, you know, I don't care what level it is. If you have the guy that's calling the plays, seeing the same things and understanding the reason why you're calling plays and be able to adjust. If you listen to what Brady said, Brady was playing chess while everybody else was playing checkers, right? And the reason being is because he understood the game to the level and degree of which Belichick did. They were on the same page. They knew exactly what they were looking for. They knew exactly what they were trying to do. And they knew exactly how to adjust and adapt during the games in a real life situation with full speed bullets flying at you.
Yep.
And not everybody has that. I think that was one of Cam's biggest knocks initially was, you know, he's going to be great. He's going to make plays. But when things break down, he was good enough to be able to do that because he was so physically gifted that he could.
Yep.
But not everybody's like that. So what do you what separates you from the next? But I don't like the argument, though, of different coordinators. I think it doesn't hurt or it doesn't help. But I don't know if it hurts as much because we just saw a guy win a Super Bowl that went through 10 different coordinators and for 4 years and Jalen Hurts. He's not had the same coordinator. So, you know, he just goes out and wins a Super Bowl. I know they got Barkley and they have a great offensive line, a great defensive line. That's the way
I think it's a solid point, but he also had great everything all around him.
So that's the point that I'm making with Bryce. Don't go out and get the one piece that's going to make Bryce better. Go out and get the team better.
Yeah. And you know, the more we talk about it and, you know, we've talked about this over the last few weeks, part of me has to think that if you're Dan Morgan, and you brought up a great point earlier, because he was a great middle linebacker in the league, he knows how important a defensive line is. So there's no question that defensive line is the number one need on this team. No, everyone agrees with that. But you got to think that if you are Dan Morgan, especially with a head coach like Canales, who's an offensive dude, you got to believe that they got to go into free agency going, man, if we can check off a safety and check off a D end and a D tackle or whatever the case may be, then if a guy like Warren is sitting there at number eight, man, because now we've already fixed a lot of the defense, but there's still work to be done, especially because it's such a deep defensive draft. And they may have guys, and a lot of the pundits are saying this, that you really could get a guy in the second round that could be just as good as the defensive in the first round. And so,
and that's where you're going to win the draft.
100%.
That's where you win the draft, DJ, is that the third and fourth round, the first and second round, you take your risks because you see the upside. And not always does that pay off, right? And you're not necessarily dead if you go out there and you get really good depth in that third, fourth, fifth round with guys that are going to be playmakers. Puka.
Yep.
Right. What round was he drafted in?
Yeah. I mean, was it the third?
It wasn't one or two.
Nope.
Sure. So wasn't. Steve Smith, what round was he drafted in?
Yeah.
Right. Those are the players that I'm talking about that make the difference in franchises that can be game changers for quarterbacks when you get them in the third, fourth, fifth round.
Yeah.
Right. Those are the guys that are going to be the ones that step up and say, okay, we weren't projecting that and we beat everybody else because everybody's going to get, you're really not going to have many can't miss guys first, second round anymore because how much studying they do, you know, all the evaluations that they go through, all the analytics that they use to go out there and evaluate these guys. You know, quarterback is going to be the one maybe exception to that because of how much impact. If you get the right guy, he's going to help you. If you don't, he's going to hurt you that much. So, but where you really win is third, fourth, fifth round.
Yeah.
And that's what the Panthers have got to nail.
Unfortunately, too, I went and looked at the third round picks over like the last 5 years for the Panthers, and there's not one player, not one. Now, last year, they've got a couple kids who
can take that further back into even Marty Herning. Marty Herning hit home runs in the first and second round.
Yeah. Mainly first. Yeah.
I mean, second round, you can throw the second round in there, too. I mean, we got a center, a Hall of Fame center in there.
Yep.
You know, we had some really good running backs. We've also had some busts with Dwayne Jarrett, you know, some guys like that in the first round. But when it comes to first round picks, he knocked it out of the park pretty much. He was the one, if you remember, that took the risk because Cam Newton wasn't a lock first round pick, number one overall. A lot of people's having him 15, 16, maybe even sliding the second round because he was a ball dominant guy. They didn't think he could read defenses. You know, he was this, that, and the other. Marty Herning took him and the risk to take him number, and he changed the frame, got us to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Almost had us in an undefeated season.
Well, even Julius Peppers, you know, when Herning took him, I mean, he was maybe consensus best player in the draft, but the team needed other things at that time. He could have went other way. And some people were mad that he took Peppers, and, you know, all these years later, he's a Hall of Famer.
Getting back to what you said, and this is what brought me, you know, going full circle back to the point you were making, or I made earlier with our guy, it was Dan Morgan, understanding the guys in front of him. You know, for a running back, you love having what? An offensive line that can block. For a middle linebacker, his offensive line is the defensive line. Now he can play off of those guys, and he has the same vision. There's the same exact thing, just on opposite sides of the ball. The running back sees holes, offensive line creates holes. The running back sets the offensive line up. The running back is able to dart through those holes after he sets them up. It's all kind of the continuity that exists with that. Same thing happens on the defensive line. Defensive lines eats this double team up. Linebacker has the vision to know where the running, because his vision is going to match the running back's vision. He's going to see the hole. He's going to bait. He's going to fire.
Yep.
Right. That hole's not going to be very big because the defensive, he can fire his gun and make those plays. And that's where Ray Lewis was successful because he had Hall of Fame. He had really good guys. Dan
had a great defensive line. I mean, Dan played behind probably the best defensive line the Panthers ever had with Buckner and Chris Jenkins and those dudes. So,
but the two guys in the middle did their job, right? And they weren't getting pushed around. So if you're the problem is right now for the Panthers is we don't have a Dan Morgan or a Luke Kuechly at middle linebacker.
Right.
Right. So that's the issue, right? There's so many.
Jewel did have a good year last year.
He's not one of those guys. No. Right. So the same type of thing is that do we go draft that guy or get that guy in the second or third round? But it all starts with this. And I said this going into the playoffs, and this is going to stand the test of time. It's not rocket science. We, a lot of times as analysts and or coaches, try to make it rocket science. And as fans, we definitely do. Whoever runs the ball, whoever stops the run is always going to win most games. They're not going to win all games, but they're going to win most games. It's not rocket science. It's the foundation of the house. It's the foundation of a team. And it's like the heartbeat. Without the heart, the offensive line is the heart. Without the heart, you can't run the unit, right? And our offensive line is always the heartbeat. Same thing can be said for the defensive line on the defensive side. You've got to be able to stop the run. For the Carolina Panthers, they were the worst in the league, right? When things mattered, when the game was on the line, teams moved down like we were a sieve. And we saw it with Kansas City. We saw it with many other games. And we were hanging on to win games after we'd played our ass off to get in position. I think the offense is good enough to compete. The defense isn't.
Right.
And the defensive line in particular, getting our interior back with
Derek Brown
is going to help us a lot. But you still need guys up front that can chase quarterbacks down and stop the run. Look at both teams that played in the NFL in the Super Bowl. It's a copycat league. Yep. I'll say it 100 times. What did they do better than everybody else? They ran the ball. They stopped the run. Yep. They ran the ball. They stopped the run. The biggest difference maker in that game for the Eagles was who? The defensive tackles.
Yeah.
Man. They were just dominant up front. They could do what? They could drop seven guys in coverage.
They didn't blitz one time the entire game.
They dropped seven guys in coverage and made it so difficult for Mahomes to throw the ball because those windows are small, tight, and they got pressure with those guys up front, sacked them seven times.
Yep.
That's where you win or lose football games. So for the Carolina Panthers, because it's a copycat league, because they're in the NFC, are going to face those types of teams, you better be solidified on the offensive line, and you better go get your defensive line, because that's right now what the Panthers need the most.
Yeah, and the more I think about it, because you're totally right, and the defensive line, the Panthers' defense is going to look a lot different.
It needs to.
We all know that, right? There's no other way to go.
If we don't want to be picking top five again or top ten again, it needs to look a lot different.
Exactly. But the more I think about the scenario of if, and it's a big if, that if they can fill a few of these holes on defense and Warren's there at number eight, the more I'm starting to go, man, I would take that in a heartbeat. Now, I know a lot of Panther fans will be, you're nuts. We need to draft all defense. And look, there's a valid point to that. However, with a guy like Warren, I just think they don't come around that often. And to give Bryce another way, I saw another article the other day.
If you're going to make that pick, and I'm not saying it's a wrong pick, because a lot of people have that problem with McCaffrey, right? Yeah. If you remember.
Well, Keekly, everyone went nuts because we already had John Beeson, Pro Bowl middle linebacker.
Right.
And we took Keekly and everyone goes, what are you doing?
Right. If you're a generational player and you're a lock in your mind as an organization that guy is going to be a Hall of Fame player, Pro Bowler, a consensus Pro Bowler every year, you take that guy.
Yeah.
In the first round, because you can still make up for it later in the third, fourth, fifth round and find your Pacuas and your Cooper Cups and guys like that that are going to be really good to help you go out there and make plays. But if you think that tight end is going to be, who's the kid, Brock Bowers, if you think he's going to be another, and he's going to be a generational tight end, then you take him.
Yeah, and listen, I would have never thought I would even come that far to think that we would even consider an offensive player. But, because this defensive draft is so deep, if they can nail it in free agency, and listen, if you I read a whole article about all the different free agents out there, and the Panthers are connected to quite a bit of them. The defensive lineman from Philadelphia, and I don't remember his name, who's a beast, that's a free agent in Philadelphia. He's not going to be able to re-sign everybody, right? They've got a lot of guys.
The D-tackle?
No, he's a Williams, I think. I've got
from him. Philly?
Yeah, not one of the young Georgia kids, other one. And they're saying the Panthers and the Patriots are going to battle out for him possibly. And, Patriots have $120 million, so they got more money than anybody. But if they could nail a guy like that or a Josh Sweat, the defensive end from the Eagles, and then, at safety, whether it be a Holland or, there's a lot of good, Reed, there's a lot of good safeties out there on the free agents list.
I think that's the from what I've been reading for the Panthers in particular, is that safety and free agency is one of their top priorities. And again, knowing Dan and knowing that, the game of football, and I'm sure he thinks similarly to the way I think when it comes to how you build a team. Where do you start? In baseball, basketball, football, you always start up the middle. You have to be strong up the middle in order to play great defense, right? I don't care if it's shortstop, second base. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's center and power forward. You better be strong up the middle if you're going to – Soccer, it's the midfield. It's the sweeper, the midfield, and the striker. All the guys that control the game are going to come from the middle on offense and defense. So the same thing applies in football. You have to be strong up the middle. They're that's where the start of everything happens is, you know, from there, and everything, it's really the foundation of the foundation.
Sure, no doubt. And like I said, so are you on board with the scenario that if they nail three guys on defense that are all going to be starters and free agents?
It's a lot of money.
And Warren's there.
It's a lot of money.
It is, but I mean, they've got
especially for defensive guys that we're talking about, DJ. I don't think it's possible for the Panthers. I just don't.
You don't think they can sign three defensive starters in free agency?
I do. I don't know if they're going to be the impact that one of these guys, if the kid from Michigan's there,
Graham,
and you have a chance to take him or the tight end. I think the Panthers, unfortunately, are in a position that they have to take him because Derek Brown's going to be a free agent, you know, soon.
No, they re-sign him.
Okay, so he'll be here for a while.
Yep. Coming off an injury.
There's still not going to be any depth. So if they think that Graham's going to be there, you know, for Michigan, I think he has to be the pick for the Panthers.
Well, if he's there, you know, listen. And
regardless of who they get in free agency, unless it's a Pro Bowl defensive tackle, which they're going to have to pay $100 million, $30 million a year. I mean, you're going to have to pay through the wazoo to get that guy. I don't think that you do that for that position.
Well,
I think you go build safety. I think you get some linebackers up the middle. And then you have Horn coming back. You have Brown. And then you have a young D-tackle that Brown can mentor. And then you start from there. And then they push the pocket to those defensive ends. They're going to rush up the field. There's a lot of guys that can do that, that run straight. And then eventually we're going to get brushed. You know, the quarterback's going to get swept to you. And you're going to fall into sacks because of that. But you have to be able to stop the run. You can't get pushed around in the middle. You go D-tackle. In free agency, you get a safety and maybe a middle backer, something like that, maybe a defensive end. But again, those are pricey yep. numbers. And you try to make hay in the second, third, and fourth round with really good depth in this year's draft.
Yeah. And there are the tight end is it's deeper than we thought after the combine. And again, tight end, honestly, it's not one of the top needs for the Panthers. We all agree on that. I'm just saying that
he would be the best player. He would be, if we took the tight end from Penn State, he would be, in my opinion, starting off the best players on the Panthers offense, on the entire offense.
I totally agree. And that's why I have a hard time not taking him if we address things in free agency. If we don't, then obviously we got to go defense. And here's the other thing.
Do we have that luxury, though?
Well, we'll find out after free agency, which starts March 12th. But the one thing that I'll say, and you brought up Graham, who if he's there at number 8, you know, I think it's going to be really hard for the Panthers not to take him because the dude is a beast. He's a great run stopper, and him and Derek Brown next to each other would just be.
He is very similar to the kid that we saw from the Eagles from Georgia. You know, that just he was causing havoc.
Yeah, yeah.
Carter caused havoc for every team that he played. And having played that position myself, knowing how impactful that guy was, he was eating guards and centers up.
Yep.
Right. And then you add the other guy from Georgia, you know, who, so here's the thing. Who's the defensive tackle from Georgia that's coming out?
Well, right. Yeah. Ironically, there's two of them there that will be there that a lot of people, you know, you can look at different mocks, but both tackles are mocked to the Panthers. But here's the thing though, that bothers me a little bit. Everyone says this is a very deep draft, which is true when it comes to defense. True. And that's great for the Panthers, but there's not there's not a consensus defensive end or defensive lineman. Graham maybe would be the one.
What do you mean?
At number 8, where we're
at number 8. Okay, because there is a consensus number 1.
Abdul Carter.
And
sure.
He's Abdul Carter.
And even with him, injuries are an issue.
When you were saying this is probably 3-4 weeks ago, you know, maybe a month and a half ago when the season was still starting, we started the podcast a while back when we were talking about, you know, players in the draft. Because I think we've been talking about this for quite some time.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of evolving. That's what's so great about, you know, having, you know, the periods and the time frame, you know, the way the NFL does it, because there's always going to be something to talk about. Absolutely. They've done it so it's year-round.
Yep.
When you said that he might be there at 8, I'm like, it's a no-brainer. You take him all day because he's exactly what the Panthers could use.
Yeah.
Right? But I think everybody else started seeing, you know, maybe what we saw
in the playoffs, he just, you know, when he was on the big spotlight, he just crushed it.
He's going to be the number one player taken.
Yeah, if the Titans don't trade down, he'll be the first pick, I would think. But yeah, he won't be there. Graham is interesting because I guess there's a slight chance he could be there. But other than Graham, let's take him out of the equation. All these other defensive ends and linemen that we're talking about, and you know, we talked about five or six of them, with Brett earlier. You and I've talked, but there's not a consensus at number eight where you go, that's the defensive guy they got to take at number eight.
No, here it is.
Who?
The D tackle from Michigan.
No, I'm saying if Graham's not there.
Oh, if he's not there.
If he's not there. If he's not there, the rest of these guys have.
You think if somebody moves up and something happens where there's a little trade, and you know, somebody comes in that needs a D tackle to take Graham. Because he's that good,
or if he, because Jacksonville's ahead of us, and they're, a lot of mocks have Graham going to them, so who knows? And because there's not a consensus guy that if he's there on the defensive side, the Panthers have to take. Because look, there's great value at cornerback right there. We just talked about two safety, Starks, the safety from Georgia, another Georgia player, is going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. Everyone agrees on that. And so at eight, like you said earlier, you can't miss in the first round. It kills a franchise. You can't miss. And the Panthers have had good luck in the first round over the years, thankfully. But at number eight.
Well, I think I'm talking specifically top 10 guys. That's where you're looking to get your most value, right? But I think what I said earlier, at least the point I was trying to make, was not that. It was that if you miss in your first round, you have got to kill it third, fourth, fifth round. Right, you can overcome that if those things exist. Yeah. If you miss your first round and don't find that third, then you're talking about the next year being the same position you were the year because you didn't get any better.
Yeah, but with the Panthers and the state of their team and picking at number eight, like I said, because there's not a defense. I mean, look, everybody has an opinion. There's five or six guys that are going to be in that mix, and you can talk to five or six different analysts. They're going to give you a different dude for the Panthers. So because of that, is why I really love the idea of if you can do what you need to do in free agency, then you can go take a guaranteed can't miss guy like Warren at number eight, help your offense and nail your first round pick. And then with your second, third, and fourth pick, there's so many good defensive players still to be taken that, you know, listen, some of these defensive, like the two Georgia guys, for instance, at defensive tackle, you know, one played off the ball. There's people saying, what position are they going to play? Are they going to play here? Are they going to be a defensive end? Are they going to be a stand-up line? You know, there's a lot of thought going behind that. And so they're, you know, neither one of those guys, assuming that would be one of the two guys they would take, are, you know, a consensus future Pro Bowl. Now, they could be. I mean, look, they have the skill set to be that, but you never know. If you can nail some guys in free agency, it's kind of like the transfer portal. You know, these guys in free agency, you've already seen their work on tape in the NFL against NFL players. It takes a lot of the guesswork out, right? If you can get some of those guys through free agency, then with your first round pick, I think it puts the onus on, again, making sure you nail it. And a guy like Warren, even a guy like Starks, I mean, he's a can't miss prospect in my opinion. And he's on the defensive side of the ball. I just don't see them taking a safety at number eight. And like I said earlier, I don't see them taking anything but a defensive player at eight. However, if they nail it in free agency, then I think that would open the door a little bit maybe for a guy like Warren. And I think he would be the only one, by the way, that they would do it with. If I had to even go further on that, I think the Panthers are probably going to trade down. And Dan Morgan addressed that the other day, saying that he doesn't see any possibility really where they would trade up, but he does see trading down to pick up picks because they obviously they need as many picks as they can get. You have a team like the Cowboys at 12 who need a running back desperately, who if Genty is still on the board, you could see them trying to move up to get him. The Hampton's another guy that, you know, I know Brett doesn't see him going in the first round, but he's.
So here's the conundrum that a lot of these teams are. And, you know, I'm looking just at the draft order and the needs of these teams. And two or three of them need quarterbacks. Biggest need, Raiders quarterback. Biggest need, Jets quarterback. You could probably make the argument that there's a couple other teams that need quarterback. The Giants, your Giants need a quarterback, yep. Right? So when you start looking at that position, the question as a GM that you have to ask yourself, in my opinion, would be, can we get by with a veteran guy and go take a generational player with one of these draft choices, right? We don't have our guy, but we have other guys out there that can probably be as good for 1 year, but they're not going to be our franchise guy, right? Because of their age. Russell, they tried to do it in Pittsburgh. It worked for them, right? It got them to the playoffs. Didn't get them ultimately where they wanted to be with Russell Wilson. They had a guy that so they're going to have to, they're going to need a quarterback as well. But what the reason I'm saying that is that can one of these teams, your Giants are probably a great example. Are we going to get, are we going to improve more by going and getting a generational talent at one of these players that we've aforementioned, the tight end being the main one, that can make us better for years to come and is always going to be something that is going to stand out and be better and get by with a veteran quarterback, you know, Aaron Rodgers, for example.
Aaron Rodgers, it's funny you said, you mentioned the Giants. The Giants were really in on Matt Stafford, as well as the Raiders. Those are the two teams that...
Okay, there's another one.
Well, Stafford...
Russell Wilson will be a third one.
Yeah, and so Stafford re-signed with the Rams, so he's off the table. But now the Giants are being linked to Aaron Rodgers. Evidently, they've made him a nice offer. So you're right. So if the Giants were to sign Aaron Rodgers, do they take a Shador Sanders, let's say, at three, or... do they take Travis Hunter, which is where most mocks have him going, because now they got Aaron Rodgers, and then he could take a dart or one of these other quarterbacks in the second, third round, which is what I would
develop.
Yeah, exactly. Because none of these guys are.
I don't think that that's the, if you're going to do that, I don't think you even draft a quarterback in this draft, right? Unless he's your guy. If you're quarterback and you're drafting top five, just to take a quarterback, you have a quarterback need one.
Yeah, no one's going to do that. I mean, yeah, 100%.
If you don't believe, who's going to be the generational game changer? Cam Ward. He's the only one in this draft to me that's going to be, gosh, he is the can't miss guy. He's the guy that, you know, is the difference. Because I don't think it's a great draft for quarterbacks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
Because of that, right. If we agree on that, then because of that, why not get a stopgap guy for a year, maybe two, if he has a good year, and go get a generational game changer?
Well, I think that's what most teams would probably do. I mean, the Panthers are, like I said, because they have a quarterback, they have the luxury of, you know, of either taking a defensive player, or if they nail free agency, maybe taking a tight end. That's the only scenario I think that would work for that. The Giants, and back to the quarterbacks, you know, it is a weaker quarterback draft than last year, for sure. But there are some guys out there. The quarterback at Louisville is one of them. Dart from Ole Miss. There are some guys who some teams really do like that they would be able to get later. So, you know, Milroe's a guy that you and I both agree.
He's a great example.
Passer. He's, you know, but if you could draft him in the second, third round, the dude ran a 4.3. He's built like a Greek god.
Mm-hmm.
His only issue is his accuracy, which is a huge issue when you're a quarterback, obviously. But if you could sign Aaron Rodgers, let's just use the Giants.
They said the same thing about Jalen Hurts, by the way.
No doubt. And that's the thing. Jalen Hurts didn't start right away either, which is great. If we'll use the Giants. If the Giants were to sign Aaron Rodgers and then they took a Milroe in the second or third round and he could sit on the bench under Aaron Rodgers for a year or two, then absolutely you'd do it. And I'm using Milroe as an example. There's other quarterbacks they may like more or less, but Milroe is as intriguing of a prospect there is, because his measurables are off the charts. His accuracy is just an issue. He airmailed a pass at the combine the other day that you know, was 20 feet.
Was over. Cam Newton-esque?
Oh, man. Cam even said, damn. You know, it was that kind
that's
of.
High.
Yeah, that's high. But yeah, so it'll be interesting. And obviously, we'll be talking a lot about the draft and free agency over the next couple months. Like Frank said, you know, the NFL does a good job now of making sure they don't go too long without having something to touch the fans and keep your interest. So we'll be talking that as the year goes on.
I was just looking to see, I can't remember when Jalen Hurts selected the Eagles in the second round.
Yeah.
Second round. Jalen Hurts was selected and arguably I would say top five guy in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's been great. And,
you know, and it's not what he's just been able to do with his arm. It's the way that position is transforming.
Yeah.
And that's where a guy like Milroe, I agree with what you're saying and your thoughts are, if we can get him in the second round, go get a stopgap guy, get a stud player in the first pick that's going to be a generational player,
yep.
Then you go get a Milroe or Dart or somebody like that in the second round that can maybe grow to be, you know, like Jalen Hurts, then that's obviously the upside of that. And I think the Giants are in a perfect position to do exactly what you just said.
The Giants and you know, if there's some quarterbacks out there that are the stopgap, like you said, Russell Wilson's out there. Justin Fields is out there. Aaron Rodgers is out there. Everyone's waiting to see what the Falcons are going to do with Kirk Cousins. I mean, he's owed a ton of money, so the Falcons are going to get crushed on the salary cap, regardless of whether they keep him or let him go. But you also have Daniel Jones, you have Sam Darnold, who can get franchise tagged and traded because they've got the rookie they drafted last year coming.
So Sam Darnold from Minnesota. I think that they're going to probably re-sign him.
Well, with McCarthy, who was their first pick last year, who everyone loves, I mean, probably the strongest arm in the league, I mean, when it comes to throwing it deep.
But you have him on a rookie contract, so that's a value for a team.
Exactly. So, Darnold, you could franchise tag and trade him and get assets for that. And so I think my point of the whole matter is I think there are some teams that are going to go the stopgap way. It'll be interesting to see what that allows them to do in the draft, where as a team like the Panthers, when they went and got Bryce Young, they had to have a quarterback. This year in the draft, Cleveland's an interesting spot. They're drafting number two. You know, obviously Deshaun Watson's not playing with an Achilles, and he was not good in Cleveland anyway. They need a quarterback. So they're the one team I think that if you had to bet would take one would be them. However, what if Cam Ward does – what if somebody trades up first to the Titans and takes Cam Ward? Now, if you're a second and you're the Browns, Abdul Carter's sitting right there, and Myles Garrett said he's not playing for you anymore, so they're going to trade Myles Garrett, the Pro Bowl defensive end, if Abdul Carter's there.
Unless Abdul Carter comes there.
Well, or he could be the replacement.
I mean, the Browns have the most talent for the shittiest, the crappiest record in football. So they have as many guys out there that could play and have difference. You know, I don't know what's going on with Cleveland coaching, tradition, whatever it might be. But, if you get Jalen Carter to the Browns, Myles Garrett ain't going nowhere.
Not Jalen Carter.
Abdul Carter.
Well, no, but Myles Garrett's saying he just ain't going to play for him anymore. He's done. And now that doesn't mean he's not. We see that a lot. However, if they were to move him, because guess who the team that they say is in the driver's seat to get him is?
Probably the Panthers.
The Eagles. So, you know.
Well, of course. I mean, they're saying that because the guy wants to go to play for a winning team.
Well, they're saying that because the Eagles front office has done a great job of gathering draft picks over the years, nailing the draft short. So on defense.
What do the Eagles have to give up to get him?
I don't know. That remains to be seen. I'm sure they'll have to give up a first-round pick. Luckily for them, they're drafting 31st. So that's not even a first-round pick, really. So the Eagles are in a good spot to get him. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little college basketball, a little bubble, a little ACC tournament coming up here in a couple weeks. We're both going to be attending NCAA tournament.
I like talking bubble.
Yeah, I know you do, and I know that you're a big Tar Heel guy, so I'm sure we'll have a nice debate about their chance to get in the tournament. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Suit Up Sports. Suit Up Sports. Here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ The Suit Stout, along with my buddy Frank Garcia, who just returned from a week-long vacation in Cabo, which I'm sure didn't stink. How was that?
Hola, que paso, muchacho. Uno más cerveza. I no longer speak English. I speak Spanglish. Well, so many drinks out there. So much fun. And
great food. You got
a great little tan, and I'm starting to peel, so I'm not going to take my shirt off.
Please don't.
No, I don't want all the ladies to jump through the TV. So
it's funny. We had not Cabo weather, but this weekend in Charlotte was beautiful. And Saturday I actually wore shorts. And I think maybe within the first hour of me wearing shorts, I probably had 15 people comment on how white my legs were. So I'm definitely not ready for that yet.
I guess. I know you can't play golf yet.
No, but I'm getting there.
Because your back is still out of place. And it is becoming golf season here in the Carolinas for sure. So I know that a lot of times you're close to that out of bounds.
Yeah.
And if they saw your legs, they'd probably think you were out of bounds.
They think it was a stake.
Yeah.
I actually got the doctor gave me permission to hit a bucket of balls at the range this week. And if it went well, then he gave me permission to play 9 holes next week. So I think I'm back. I was in the gym 4 times last week.
Okay.
So I think we're getting back. Still some pain, but taking it slow. Matt,
I don't know if you ever saw The Predator.
Oh, yeah.
So remember how he has like the vision where he looks into the bodies of the people? What would he see if he looked into all the injuries that we have? Like,
oh my God,
he'd see broken knee. Yeah, he'd see back scan, aching.
Yeah.
His CAT scan would be just like, oh, that's definitely somebody we're not going to take, man, because his skull, even though it might be big, that body is broken.
My liver would not like that. Yeah, that would. I wish we had that, but not for public knowledge.
Yeah,
your own knowledge. But Welcome back. And this weekend was kind of crazy in sports. We had some great college basketball. We're getting down to the nitty gritty with that, with teams trying to battle, bubble teams. And then some of the top teams, really putting their foot on everybody's throat, like Auburn, who beat Kentucky. That was the first time Auburn won in Kentucky in 25 years, I believe. And they whooped them. And then you got Duke, who continues to just play great basketball.
They were up 40 at one point against Miami. 40 points.
Duke was?
Yes. And, I mean, they started putting the reserves back in. But I don't know if there's two better teams in the country right now playing better basketball. I've seen Florida play.
Yeah.
And at any given day, I mean, I know they're number 3 in the country right now. And it's interesting to see, like, all the breakdowns and the brackets and, the bracketology. And that's what we kind of get forward, getting pumped up for in March. And it is March. And it's right around the corner. So that March Madness is, like, one of the things, like, the Masters that we look forward to. It's like kickoff weekend in the NFL or in baseball. It's opening day.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you goosebumps because it's just right around the corner. And I've been watching a lot more college basketball as you have this year.
Yeah.
It is so much a better game right now
than what
the NBA is. I try to watch some games last night in the NBA, and literally it has just become a 3-point competition. Nobody plays defense. There was turnovers everywhere. It is completely a different game than what we grew up watching. There's no inside out.
Nope.
It's all kick out, drive, penetrate. You're 2 feet away from the basket with an easy layup, and you kick it out to a guy that's wide open for a three. I never understood that. Take the two if it's right there. And ultimately, over time, the percentages are going to add up when you're knocking the 3-pointers down. But I mean, it's just a completely different game, and it's really hard to watch. College basketball, however, is not.
Yeah, I agree. And, it's funny. I turned down one of my buddies, Tony Rulin, offered me a pair of tickets to in the suite with him to see the Hornets play the Wizards Saturday. And I turned them down. Like watching the Hornets. And the Hornets got whooped. Hornets are the second worst team in the league. You know who the worst team is? The Wizards. You know what the Wizards' record against the Hornets is this year?
3-0?
4-0.
4-0.
So
it's not – so how can you say the Hornets are the second?
Well,
the Hornets just won one more game, and the Wizards are just a couple of games smarter than the Hornets.
Yeah.
The Hornets are just the idiots for not trying to go out there and tank and put more ping pong balls in the bucket.
I don't know if they're trying to tank it, but none of the Hornets seem to play back-to-back games. Like, that's what gets me about the NBA. You're right about the three-point. I think the other day Golden State shot 55 three-pointers in the game, if I'm not mistaken. And that's really not unheard of anymore.
And they're Golden State. They're coming here tonight.
Yeah.
So you want to watch an ass whooping
with that.
Yeah. You want to watch an ass in a 3-point competition.
Yeah, good luck with that.
That's what you're going to see tonight.
Yeah. The Hornets are awful. I've always been a big Hornet fan, but you're right. The NBA product is garbage. And unfortunately, the Hornets, who I used to love watching, I can't watch it. And none of their players play. Well, they play 1 out of 5 games. And maybe that is part of them trying to tank, giving this guy a rest. But a lot of teams are doing it. And
LeBron, and I hate to say it,
He at least plays back-to-back. I'll give him that.
Oh, come on. No, I mean, LeBron to me is probably the biggest demise of the NBA over the last 5 years, at least since COVID started, since the political stances started taking place. LeBron James has brought down, because he's the face of the NBA. I think we'd agree with that. Like, you can't have Doncic or some of these other foreign players be the face of the NBA. Nowitzki, sorry, when he was back, he was never even though he was one of the best players, he was never the face of the NBA.
Yep.
It has to be an American player, in my opinion, because this is where the product is.
Yep, I agree.
Right, so LeBron is still the bell cow, and he has torn down the NBA with his entitlement and the way that he's fighting for these players to not play back-to-back games. Barkley has destroyed him, and so if some of these other older veteran players, Kobe Bryant would be rolling over in his grave right now, watching LeBron destroy the NBA because he was the bell cow, and the way that he played, the way that he performed, I see these videos all the time, and I didn't give him enough respect when he was in the league for how he got players around him and how much people respected the way he played the game and the way he prepared.
Yep.
LeBron is, good for him. He's going on what, his 50th year in the NBA, came out when he was 13 years old, right? I'm exaggerating obviously, but I mean, he just scored his 50,000 point last night.
He's 18 points away from getting that.
I think last night he had a chance, whatever.
I will give you this, and I'm not a LeBron guy for sure, but I will say this. I did see a stat talking about playing back-to-back games where he's had back-to-back games like 350 times in his career, and he's played in them 308 of them. So I'll give him that. I mean, we got guys in the league now. Look, I mean, the Hornets are a great example. You know, their best players can't play one out of five.
LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't play back-to-back.
He doesn't play back-to-back games. Why not? Because LeBron set the tone.
I don't know if LeBron
set he gave them the avenue. So when they went to the CBA and they bargained for the what they have right now, and they're bargaining for less. Can you imagine? You know, I know we have a very nice, but making the amount of money that these guys make, and I think that's what pisses a lot of fans off, is the amount of money these guys are making and saying, you know what, I don't feel like going to work today. I know you paid your hard-earned money to come watch me. Don't care about you. All right?
Yep.
That's so, again, with Jordan, Kobe, Shaq, Barkley, all these guys played because they respected the fans that came and paid their hard-earned money to watch them play, right? You don't see that today. The athletes in the NBA today, and maybe other sports, I mean, you throw athletes in general, the entitlement, that's why Calipari's not recruiting high school kids because he doesn't want to deal with the entitlement.
Oh, you mean Patino?
Patino, excuse me.
Yeah.
Patino doesn't want to deal with high school kids because he doesn't deal with the headache of these kids. The entitlement in sports today, because why? The money has gotten so great that these guys are trying to extend their careers as long as possible. And I do blame the guys because they have control of that, but it has just become such a bad product, and the NBA is the bell cow in front of it all. Right. Yeah. And it's so hard to watch because of that.
Yeah, I'm with you. The product is garbage. But on the other hand, you're right. College basketball this year has been great. I've loved watching it. You know, even with the portal and even with the transfer, the NIL, all those things, it's been really fun to watch. And you see teams built differently that are playing great basketball. Duke has three freshmen getting a lot of minutes. No other team has.
Duke has three of the best freshmen in the game. And Cooper's starting with Cooper Flagg.
No doubt. And tonight's his last game at Cameron Indoor, assuming he goes to the pros, which chances are that he will. What I found interesting this weekend in some of these games is you have some of these bubble teams who, you know, not only do they need to win games, but they need other teams to lose. So this weekend I was kind of watching some of those teams like Georgia, the Tar Heels, some of those.
You still think the Tar Heels have a chance?
I think they've got a small chance. I will say this. I think I would still bet they have to win the ACC tournament to get in. Like, I still think that's probably how they get in. If they've won 5 of 7, they've got the 18th strongest schedule. They don't have
with
any
losses.
They have no big wins really. They got Virginia Tech tomorrow night. They'll whoop them, I'm sure. And then that sets up them playing Duke at Cameron and Cooper Flagg's last game. I don't think anyone's going to expect Carolina to go in there and beat Duke, especially after the whoop and Duke put them on. That game's in Chapel Hill. And so maybe they give them a game. Who knows? I thought they would give them a game last game, as you remember. I think I bet you on that, and I was wrong. But, yeah, I think they have an outside shot if they win. Even if they win out the regular season and then maybe go three games deep in the ACC tournament, maybe.
Let me remind you, you were absolutely wrong.
By the way, I don't want them to get in.
You were absolutely wrong, and you do owe me. Number two is that you have kids, right? Remember when they would take the little stick and put it in the bubbles and they'd blow it out and the big ones would come out. And at the very end, you had that little foam that couldn't blow any bubbles. That's Carolina. They're on the end of the stick that has zero chance because there's nothing left in their tank. There's no juice. There's no bubbles. They have no chance to get in. I said it 2 weeks ago and I'll say it again. They are done. They have no athletes. They have nobody that's going to make plays. When you're looking at these teams that are in the dance, the only thing they have is name recognition.
Well, that will help. Don't you think if they win, and that's kind of why I give them a 20-30% chance of getting in.
20 or 30?
If they win out.
Now you've made them a bubble now.
Well, yeah, I think they're in the bubble.
They're the smegma of the bubble.
If they win the next two games and then they win three games.
Who's the next two games?
At Virginia Tech and home against Duke.
So they aren't being Duke.
I don't think so either.
They're not even. Duke will be favored by 15 points. Yeah. And probably win by 25.
Yeah, I don't see them being Duke either. But if they went 1-1 and then had a nice run in the ACC tournament, maybe. I would bet. If you ask me to bet right now, I would say they're not going to make the tournament.
I would bet a lot of money. I wouldn't say my life savings because there's always a chance.
Yeah.
Right. And Carolina has, you know, the pedigree. They have great recruits. They just don't have any chemistry. There's no playmakers, and there's no vibe right now. They don't even think they can win.
Well, they've been playing better. Like I said, they won 5 of the last 7, so they have been playing
against
better.
Who?
Well, that's the thing. The ACC is weak this year. I mean, you look at the ACC compared to a conference like the SEC.
They would beat us. Does that count as a win?
No, but still, though, you know, you got to win the games that they put in front of you, and they've been playing better. Hubert Davis made some changes in the lineup that have been working, but
they just got an extension. Everybody's talking about firing them, and it was probably on the brink of not making the NCAA tournament again. Yep. And they extended them. Yep. He got a raise.
I mean, 2030, but
he got a raise.
You watch ACC right now, who have three teams that are locks to be in: Duke, Louisville, and Clemson. And then you look at a conference like the SEC, who has 11 teams that are definitely in, and maybe 12 or 13, depending on how things fall. You know, I can't wait to watch. Normally, you know, and you've lived in Charlotte long enough to know that how big the ACC tournament is. And anyone that grew up here remembers.
I'm going to the tournament.
I think I'm going to go one night as well. And, you know, if you grew up here, you remember the teachers at 1 o'clock on that Thursday, Friday, rolling the TV in. But I'm 10 times more excited to watch the SEC tournament this year, because every game is going to be a great game for the most part. I mean, when you have 11 teams in a conference with others knocking on the door to get into the NCAA tournament, I mean, that's unbelievable. That's almost a whole 16-team bracket.
I didn't live in the ACC country when college basketball, when you had the team. But I've been, like you said, I've been around long enough to understand the tradition and the history of the ACC in this conference. And that's one of the things that always made the rivalries great. Right. Duke, Carolina being the biggest. Yeah. Tobacco Road. They have a story about it. I mean, it's a great little documentary and the history and the tradition that goes into that rivalry. However, being from Arizona was a huge basketball state as well. Mm-hmm. U of A and, you know, what they did, you know, and back in the day, that's kind of what I grew up. And then, you know, going to Washington, not really having a team to root for other than Arizona, mm-hmm. but they were so far away. And then, you know, I guess the teams that really kind of came through is that we remember when the Fab Five were around and the Running Rebels and UNLV and, you know, those teams came around, and Kansas was always, you know, blue blood program, and North Carolina with, you know, MJ and what they were doing, you know, back in the day, and, you know, with Worthy and arguably one of the greatest college basketball teams of all time, you know, back in the 80s. So I do remember those, and it feels like it's kind of getting back to that. It would be nice to see another team that had the enthusiasm and the following, and maybe the Rebels, like a UNLV, yeah. like a Fab Five, that we kind of, and, you know, Duke has always been that polarizing team. I don't really see that in the SEC. There's not, unfortunately for me this year, that's the one thing that's missing, right? And the entire thing is there's not that polarizing
team to hate.
There's not that team to hate. There's not that team that people are going to, you know, go out and buy basketball shoes with or gear because that's how good they are.
Well, you know, that's a good question. If I had to pick a team that I think is hateable, and not because of anything that they've done, but I would probably say it is Duke. And as a Duke fan, but the reason I would say that is because, number one, they're really good. They have three freshmen playing, and I think Duke, you know, some people always kind of look at them as maybe an elitist school or basketball program or whatever. So I think Duke might, like, for instance, I'll give you an example. If you're at the ACC tournament next week, mm-hmm. and Duke is playing whoever, mm-hmm. the majority of the arena that are not Duke fans are all going to be rooting for whoever they're playing. And I think Duke probably is that team.
Well, here's the problem with what you're saying for me. Who's the hateable player, right? And if there's not a hateable player, who, at least they had K. Everybody hated K. Either loved K or hated K.
Yep.
Right. It was either one or the other. There's not a hateable player on Duke. Right. You don't have, you know, the great Grayson Allen that goes and trips and plays a little dirty. Mm-hmm. You don't have
the Christian Leitners or the Bobby Hurley slapping the floor. You don't, nobody hated Grant Hill, right? I mean, right. He was just a guy that you couldn't hate, right? It's the same kind of thing with what Duke is right now. You don't hate the coach. You don't hate the play. There's nobody on that team that you're really saying, and they're freshmen. Here's what would happen. If they stayed around for 3 years like they used to,
yep.
Now there would be some hate, right? That's because the jealousy would start kicking in, and you couldn't beat us, so you got to hate us,
yeah,
right? Because you're on us,
yeah,
right? And that's what UNLV brought. That's what the Fab Five, even though there were a lot of freshmen, but they were cocky, they were arrogant.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Cooper Flagg has a little swag to him, but he's.
No, he just goes out there and plays hard.
Yeah, he's that nice kid that you want your daughter dating, right? I mean, you're not going to sit there and say, stay away from him. Grayson Allen, you might want to stay away from him, right? I mean, he might keep you out late. He might be doing something on those covers when we're not looking, right? Not that we've ever done those things, but
no, he you're right. I mean, there's really not a hateable player. Alabama's a team that a lot of people hate. A lot of people hate their coach, and he is brash, and you know they have some issues. Alabama, and they had some issues with players over the last couple of years that they felt he didn't handle correctly, and you know, so but you're right. There's really not a team that's polarized, but you know, I don't really mind that. I'll take that trade for the level of basketball we're seeing.
Yeah, I was just talking about the polarizing team that doesn't. Yeah, exist. Like
I mean, we can name when we were growing up, we can name a bunch of them.
Well, yeah,
Georgetown.
Yeah, absolutely, Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, I mean, you either loved or hated them, you know, and
Louis Carnesecca up in St. John's. I mean, you know, any team in the Big East.
Yep.
You know, you start looking. Syracuse was one of those guys with Boeheim. Right. I mean, you couldn't stand him. I mean, yep. There was a lot of teams out there, and you know, even in the ACC, you know, when you had players, you know, that were hateable, like Al-Farouq Aminu for Wake Forest, right? I mean, people either loved them or hated them. That Wake Forest team had had some great players.
Wallace, yeah.
Tim Duncan, they had some great players on that team,
yep.
Right? So you grew to hate them because they were damn good, mm-hmm. Right? And they stayed there for 3 years or 4 years, so you grew to hate them. We don't have that in college basketball. I think that's the one thing that's really missing for me is that polarizing team. There's a lot of really good teams, and I'm not saying there's not, right? Mm-hmm. And the SEC is loaded right now. You don't have that West Coast, East Coast battle, Biggie, Tupac, mm-hmm. Right? You don't have that. You know, but Arizona might be that team. UCLA could be, you know, a sleeper that wins a couple of games.
Kansas is that team a lot of times, but they're not good this year. I mean, they're going to make the tournament, but they're not good.
Right.
So, you know, they used to be that team maybe out west, out in the Midwest. And
so are we? So my question, I guess, to you is, are we seeing a trend in turnover of blue bloods? Right. Because I still think Duke is that. But Arizona was, I think they were right on the brink of that. UCLA was, mm-hmm. with as many championships as they won. They're no longer there. It's either hit or miss with them. Kansas, Kentucky were, but even in the SEC, they're like 7, 8, 9.
Yep.
I mean, they're not at the top of the league. It's Auburn. They're not a basketball. That's a football program. Alabama's a football program. Florida, I think you can make an argument, is becoming a blue blood. They were probably tier two blue blood. But the blue blood programs back in the day were who, right? They were
Duke,
North Carolina, Duke. You had Kansas, Kentucky. You had Arizona, maybe UCLA.
Yeah, that was it. I would put up there.
Yeah, I would too.
They had a run. I mean, Lute Olson had great teams there for a long time.
Yeah, they had Stoudemire. I mean, they had Steve Kerr was on the team. They had some really good. Sean Elliott was on those teams. Mm-hmm. You know, they had some really good players come out of there that, you know, you could hate that program because they're always going to be good.
Right.
They're always one, potentially two. UConn, I think, is one of those teams that's slipping in there.
Actually, I'm glad you just brought them up. They're a hateable team. And I'll tell you why. Danny Hurley.
Yeah.
is agree. Easy to hate.
Agree.
And you know, I never had a problem with UConn, but I never had a problem with Danny Hurley, obviously being a Duke fan. Bobby Hurley, I loved him as a player, but Danny Hurley's hateable. And honestly, if you're not a UConn fan, that's the team that we were missing.
Because they're good and they're hateable because of, you know, the amount of, you know, wins that they have. I mean, yeah. and their coach.
Well, let me tell you what's not hateable. It's March Madness is here. We can both agree on that. We'll be covering all of March Madness for the next month or so, all the way through the end of the national championship game here on Suit Up Sports. Thank you again for joining us. I want to thank Big D over there, our producer, for doing a great job as usual. Brett Hoffman for joining us and talking the NFL Combine and Draft. He was great. We'll have him on again. And now Frank has to go back to this nasty cold Charlotte weather after being in beautiful Cabo weather. But we'll be back with you on Friday, 8 o'clock. See you then.